Hi, this is Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. This magazine started back in April of 1985. It originally was on a C60 tape with just a few members. Over the years, we've added and changed columns, made the DX Audio Service longer, and even posted past editions to the web, taken on more subscribers, and added After Dark. With this issue, we're going to make some more changes. Don't worry, none of your column editors are gone, and the content that you've come to expect is still here. The name National Radio Club, a name that has been around for 60-some years, is now going to have its very own theme. Welcome to the brand new DX Audio Service.
DX Audio Service, National Radio Club.
Welcome to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service for September 2002. This is issue number 210, and I'm your host, Fred Vobey, the publisher of the DX Audio Service. My address is 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805-1835. You can contact me by telephone at 419-228-6223. If you're on the internet, you can send me email at fredv, that's F-R-E-D-V, at nrcdxas.org. Now, if you'd like to become a member of the DX Audio Service and live in the United States of America, the cost is $28. To members in Canada, the subscription rate is $32, and elsewhere, it's $40. Those prices are also the renewal rates. Tapes are sent via first-class mail, and you keep the cassettes. If you'd like to subscribe, make your checks payable to the National Radio Club Incorporated and send them to me at the address that I just mentioned. Or you can log on to www.nrcdxas.org/member and pay using your credit card. To start off this edition, let's travel to the other side of the Buckeye State. Here's Jerry Starr with a look at the AM switch.
Hi everybody, Jerry Starr with another edition of AM Switch from the pages of the National Radio Club's DX News magazine. On our September edition, we start with these call letter changes under reference number 539. 1220 WKBK in Keene, New Hampshire becomes WZBK. 1250 WANL Albany, Georgia changing to WSRA. 1290 WCAS Saline, Michigan becomes WHNE. 1400 KDRG Deer Lodge, Minnesota changing to KBCK. 1420 KCCN Honolulu, Hawaii becomes KKEA. 1450 WWRI West Warwick, Rhode Island changes to WLWK. 1450 WJYR Myrtle Beach, South Carolina to WQJM. 1480 WODX Marco Island, Florida to WVOI. Also on 1480 KDXX Dallas, Texas changes to KHCK. 1500 WPJX in Zion, Illinois becomes WMCC. 1510 KJAZ in San Rafael, California changes to KKAC. On 1600 WKEN in Dover, Delaware changes calls again, this time to WIBF. Also on 1600 KIVA Albuquerque, New Mexico becomes KANM. And on 1610, that new X-band station in Montreal, Quebec, the call there CJWI. Once again, a whole pile of new stations being applied for on the AM band. 1550 in Reno, Nevada. 1570 in Garden City, Georgia. On 1650 in Matistique, Michigan. 1670 Las Vegas, Nevada. 740 Fargo, North Dakota. 790 Toronto, Ontario. 880 Midland, Texas. 1180 Jacksonville, Oregon. 1250 Johnstown, Colorado. 1570 Winterville, North Carolina. And another X-band application in Canada in Toronto on 1650. Two new stations have been granted on 1160 in St. Cloud, Florida, 2500 day, 500 night, different patterns day and night. And on 1260 in Aguadilla, Puerto Rico, 250 watts daytime, 850 watts night, non-directional. This will be a synchronous repeater for WISO. Several applications of interest, all from north of the border. More Canadians heading to the FM band on 970 CBZ in Fredericton, New Brunswick, wants to go to 99.5. 1230 CKTK in Kitimat, British Columbia, wants to move to 97.7. And 1490 CKEN in Kentville, Nova Scotia, wants to move to 94.9. In otherness on 950 KTBR, Roseburg, Oregon, this silent station has returned to the air. They're now relaying KSJK, the 1230 station. On 980 WAAA, Winston-Salem, North Carolina is back on the air. 990 KXXL in Farmersville, Texas also has returned. On 1100 KLIM in Lyman, Colorado, this silent station is back on the air with a special temporary authority. The FCC calls that an STA. They are on the air with 100 watts and a temporary antenna to keep the station on the air until their new facility is built to move to Security, Colorado, which will get them much closer to the Colorado Springs market. 1150 WSNW in Seneca, South Carolina is back on the air. 1170 WDIS in Norfolk, Massachusetts has gone silent. 1180 KYET in Williams, Arizona is silent. 1210 WQLS in Ozark, Alabama, we're getting reports that they have now moved here from their former frequency of 1200. 1260 KIMB in Kimball, Nebraska has also returned to the air. 1310 KFVR, Crescent City, California has gone silent. 1370 WWLG in Pikesville, Maryland, they are now here, formerly from 1360 where they were licensed to the city of Baltimore. 1400 WHBS, Moultrie, Georgia, a new station on the air. 1470 WLMC, Georgetown, South Carolina, is silent due to lightning damage. They're expected to return and possibly may be back on by the time you receive this. 1480 WVXY in Fairbluff, North Carolina, with this new call, they are now back on the air and relaying WTXY 1540. 1600 KJIW, West Helena, Arkansas, license canceled and call deleted at the licensee's request. Also on 1600 KTXC in Cuero, Texas, license canceled, call deleted. And finally on 1600 KR2XVA, you're saying, what? Well, all these experimental synchronous transmitters that are dotting the country have an experimental call assigned to them, although you never hear it on the air. That was the call assigned to a station that was going to be in Fort Worth, relaying KRVA in Cockrell Hill, Texas, but that has now been dismissed. And that's a wrap for this month. In 30 days, more stuff from the broadcast band. Now let's head south to John Bowker.
Well, thanks again, Jerry, and hello, everybody. Today will be a little different on the travelogue because, well, first, we're going to be starting a new frequency, of course. And for a change, we're going to start on the West Coast and work our way back to the East. As you'll understand when you hear our very first station, I believe, that'll explain why we're doing it this way. Now, 740 is just another fascinating dial position. It's a clear channel, according to the famous North American Radio Broadcast Agreement, that's NARBA. It's assigned to the Canadians for their primary use. And, indeed, we hear stations from our northerly neighbor, primarily from Alberta and Ontario. There's another one in Newfoundland that doesn't really come in too well where I've ever been in the country, but I'm going to leave that kind of DX for Bruce's comment another time, perhaps. We in the United States, however, have some great stations tuned to 740 kilohertz, and we're going to hear from a number of them in the next 10 to 12 minutes. We're going to start out by the Golden Gate Bridge as we start the September 2002 DX Audio Service Travelogue. Now that's kind of a classy ID, but it doesn't quite explain why we're starting with this frequency, and perhaps this next ID from that same station will tell you why we started on the West Coast this time.
That concludes today's KCBS continuous coverage from San Francisco. We will resume News Radio 74 programming at 6 a.m. KCBS San Francisco, the world's first broadcasting station, was founded in 1909 in San Jose. Its 50,000 watts of power bring a vast Northern California audience a full schedule of comprehensive news and information. This is Charlie Serafin, Director of News and Programming for CBS-owned radio station KCBS. News Radio 74 appreciates your interest and invites your comments about our programs, which will resume at 6 a.m. right here at 74 on your AM dial.
Okay, now, this next station sure covers a lot of ground in California, all the way from San Diego at the southern end of the state, up into the desert and up around Los Angeles, too.
AM 740, your Crawford Broadcasting Company station for all of Southern California.
Top from the heart, KBRG.
Avalon!
Very nice. Yeah, we listened to them for a couple of hours in the car one day, and that was a very pleasant way to spend some time. This next station has enjoyed the 740 dial position in Phoenix for many years. But, you know, just to show you the penetration power of this relatively low frequency, 740, this station covers Phoenix, the metro area, with only 1,000 watts during the daytime hours and with less than 300 watts at night. Let's see, this first version of their ID comes from just about 14 years ago.
The KMEO SkyScan forecast. Tonight, a slight chance for a thunderstorm, the low around 88. And right now, it's 105 at KMEO FM and AM Phoenix. I'm Leslie Webster. It's 4 o'clock and time for more music.
105? You know, it's never hit 100 degrees here in Tampa, Florida. More recently, they changed their call letters. We have recordings, from Son John. Kevin Redding chimed in. Hi, Kevin. And their very newest format is available to us here on the Travelog from Carl Dabelstein, who updated things for us in the middle of July this year. This is the 740 sound of Phoenix today.
Siempre. Radio Única. Esta es Radio Única, la única cadena en español que cubre la nación de costa a costa y de frontera a frontera. Cadena Radio Única, más tuya que nunca.
Radio
KIDR 740 AM Phoenix. Esta es Radio Única. Somos una radio única. Somos la primera y la única.
Now, if you ever get a chance to visit the Carlsbad Caverns in southern New Mexico, not far from El Paso, Texas, in fact, be sure to time your visit for the evening hours, because, of course, that's when the DX is the best. But one of the most memorable things is the daily departure of bats. That's right, hundreds and thousands of bats. They come swarming out of the caverns at dusk in search of food, of course. And while you're there, you might even set your radio dial to 740.
Where you buy with confidence, own with pride.
KJTK, Carlsbad.
Okay, if we go straight north from Carlsbad, that'll put us into Colorado, ultimately. And just before you get to the influence of the Denver metropolitan area, you pass by the U.S. Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. And that's just what Wayne Heinen did back, it's been about 9 years, Wayne.
KVUU, Pueblo, Colorado Springs. KSSS, Colorado Springs. With the best mix of today's hits and yesterday's favorites.
And then, by the way, we were listening for KSSS. That was the AM side. Then last year, Scott Feibusch was in that area with his recorders.
You're a dog.
You can't trust a cat to handle a mission like this, sir.
Special conditions apply. Call Greyhound for details.
From Fort Carson
to the Air Force Academy.
We cover the news like no one else.
News Radio 740 KBOR Colorado Springs.
Where Colorado Springs comes first.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney.
Okay, just to complete the Colorado picture on this frequency, Linda and I visited the Four Points Memorial, you know, where the only place in the U.S. where four states come together. And that same afternoon, we drifted to the northeast into Colorado just to pick up this next ID.
AM 740 KVFC, Cortez, Colorado. Here's the latest CNN.
CNN Radio News.
Nice timing, fellas. We come next to a station operating with 50,000 watts during the daytime hour, so with only a slight drop-off at night to 25,000 watts. But, you know, a power drop of 2-to-1 like that means they still reach out from their towers to 70% of what they would do in full power. In other words, if they could be heard 100 miles down the road during daytime power, when they switch to their night power, they reach with the same signal strength out about 70 miles. And add to that the nighttime skip effect, and you can see that really the change from 50,000 down to 25,000 watts, provided they don't change their pattern at the same time, really doesn't affect their signal that much. Let's go to Tulsa, Oklahoma.
The home of John Erling, Paul Harvey, and Mark Sherman. 740 KRMG. Depend on us for news, weather, traffic, and fun.
AM 740
5 o'clock report.
Partly cloudy and 67 degrees. We're expecting a low tonight of 56.
Okay. You know, I mentioned earlier that this is a Canadian clear channel, but I'm just scanning the NRC logbook, and I see actually more 50,000-watt stations in the United States than I see in Canada. That's interesting. KCBS operates with 50,000 watts day and night, and so does Houston, Texas.
Now let's let our stations come in and tell you who they are, where they're coming from on the Astros Radio Network.
An increasing danger of a supertanker sinking, that story and the AccuWeather forecast after the ball game on KTRH Houston News Radio, 740 AM.
You know, I'm doing this recording at 11:30 in the morning, and if it were 11:30 at night, I'd be tempted to swing my chair around and let you hear how KTRH comes into Tampa, Florida at night. Almost every night they come in beautifully. And last night we didn't even have a thunderstorm here, so it might have worked out. But it isn't working out now. We're going to drive up to the corner of Louisiana, Arkansas, and Texas for this next ID. We might have driven a little closer to the corner, but here's what we got out of Texarkana, Texas.
KCMC, 740 AM, Texarkana, USA, your sports connection.
Okay, this next station operates with the least daytime power of any U.S. station at 740 on the dial. It uses just 229 watts during the day in Iowa.
And you ever know
News Radio, KBOE, KBOE FM. Oskaloosa.
She gave birth, now she gets prison time. I'm Richard Davies.
You know, I was thinking that was Dr. Laura's theme, but I don't think Dr. Laura gave birth. Well, never mind, I'm not going to go there. Let's get out and visit the circus headquarters in the upper Midwest.
Radio Network News, this is Doug Douglas.
A month or two ago, the subject of Hudson, Wisconsin, a very small town right on the Minnesota border, came up briefly on the audio service, and here we are back in that same town on the travelogue.
You're listening to AM 74 WRPX with studios in Hudson Township. This is WRPX Hudson, Wisconsin. It's 7 o'clock.
Now, that recording was made about 20 years ago, so we can safely assume there have been some changes, perhaps, in the format department of that station.
I'm talking about. This is WMIN Hudson St. Paul, 740 The Zone.
Down in the southeast corner of Illinois is a small community, but it's got a big reputation because it's the home of Southern Illinois University.
I might be glad you stay.
Lionel Richie, Stuck on You, Supercharged, WVLN, WSCI, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain tonight, low 58, chance of rain in the morning hours for tomorrow, turning windy and cooler in the afternoon, highs in the 64, rains dipping down to the 30s, currently 62 at WVLN, WSCI, FM only, it's 1 o'clock.
From the CNN News Center in Atlanta, I'm Larry Maher. A preview of the Republican presidential campaign played out before a crowd of the GOP faithful.
And I can tell you that Linda and I were in San Diego at that same time. And was it crowded? Oh, boy, are frogs waterproof? Of course it was crowded. And by the way, frogs are not waterproof. Let's move on to the Mountaineer State. We find this 500-watt voice of the Shenandoah Communications Company.
Football League. You're listening to the best in talk, news, sports, weather. Talk radio, WRNR Martinsburg, AM 740, Adelphia Cable, Channel 10.
Bob Fitzgerald, Jack Ham with you at Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, Florida, with 4:17 left to go in the ballgame.
And there I was up in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and they're playing in my backyard down here. Now, I got to tell you, of all the stations we have in the Travelog collection, this next station is the only one that tells the total unvarnished truth about its location. And Fred, remember we used to give annual awards to stations for doing something remarkable? I think this one deserves one of our annual awards. See what you think.
I'm Terry Daly, 740 WNOP News.
WNOP, 740 Stereo AM, Newport in Cincinnati.
Now you catch that? Newport in Cincinnati. Good for them.
With CBS News on the top of the hour, this is Classic Country, 74 WIRJ Humboldt.
Well, indeed, that does wrap us up for the month. Will you just look at the number of contributors of IDs on this segment? I see Mark Strickard and Mark Durenberger and Kevin Redding and Wayne Heinen, Scott Feibusch, John S. Bowker, and wife Linda, too. My goodness sakes, my great and enduring thanks to each of you on behalf of the club, fellas and gals. So long for now, and here's Bruce Conti.
National Radio Club.
Hello, DXers. I'm Bruce Conti, and this is the DX Digest, coming to you from Camden, Maine, where I'm on a camping expedition. I'll talk a little bit about taking your DX activities on the road in a moment. First, Ray Moore sent in an interesting report about his Trans-Pacific DX activities in North Fort Myers, Florida. Ray suggests checking 1475 kilohertz for Malaysia and reports receiving 1503 kilohertz, later identified as New Zealand. On 1475, Kota Kinabalu, Sabah, Malaysia, Ray writes, "Recapping my experiences with this station during the 2001-2002 season, their signal has been very consistent here, producing at least a trace of carrier on 54 different mornings from August 26th, when it first appeared, to its last appearance on April 19th. Best signal was March 12th, 11:28 to 11:30 UTC, with a good carrier on Verge of Audio. At first I thought this could be a deep South American, but it can't be since all of South America was in sunlight during December and January when I often heard this carrier. The average of six direction finding bearings which I was able to make was 335 degrees, close to the true bearing of 330 degrees. The path may be skewed since it skirts the auroral zone on almost the same bearing as Japan at 327 degrees. I believe the consistency of this signal is because the station is beamed toward the Philippines from 1030 to 1300 UTC, which is exactly the bearing for Florida from Sabah, meaning they are effectively pumping 2 or 3 megawatts in this direction. I'm confident that I will be able to pull audio from them next season as the sunspot cycle wanes and conditions improve. I hope others will try for this on a consistent basis around 1030 UTC come September. I'm sure most of us need Sabah, and at 10,000 miles, it would make a nice addition to our logs. Of course, this is the only radio station in the world broadcasting on the non-standard frequency of 1475 kilohertz, so it should indeed be on everyone's target list. Now on to 1503 kilohertz. An unidentified station produced audio for the third time this month, June 9th, 1015 to 1024 UTC, with a good 3-minute peak 1019 through 1022 UTC. There were two men discussing a sporting event, a brief burst of music, and a short comment by a woman. Then, a third man introduced as the director of boxing spoke for a short time, all in Aussie-accented English. A little further on, as the station was fading back into the noise, music could be heard in the background, sounding like it was played in a stadium, and then perhaps an announcer started to describe the action. Local sunrise at 1034 UTC this morning. This was by far the best down-under signal last spring, 1512, 1629, and 1638 kilohertz produced traces of audio back on April 29th, but nothing intelligible. This was later identified by David Rickish of New Zealand in a report for the New Zealand DX Times, relayed in Glenn Hauser's DX Listening Digest, and the NRC's DX News International DX Digest. A nice example of the spirit of cooperation in the DX community, by the way. David writes, from Ray Moore's details of 1503 reception on June 9th, it sounded like he was listening to Radio Sport New Zealand. They operate synchro transmitters from Wellington at 5 kilowatts and Christchurch 2.5 kilowatts in New Zealand on 1503. On June 6th, a charity boxing match, Fight for Life, was held for youth suicide victims, and it may have been an excerpt from a rebroadcast of this match, or another boxing match. It's midwinter down here, and we hear Florida AMers with regularity, so no reason why Radio Sport hasn't got to North Fort Myers in return. Now here's an example of what Ray's reception of 1503 New Zealand sounded like. Florida reception of New Zealand's Radio Sport on 1503 kilohertz. Ray DX is with a Drake R8, a homebrew receiver, and a 23-inch spiral loop with a Comdel preamp. Now, I'm here in Camden, Maine, on the Atlantic coast, camping at the Camden Hills State Park. For many DXers, going on a DXpedition to a remote location is the best option for noise-free reception. While you may not be able to travel to the far reaches of North America, such as Grayland, Washington, Newfoundland, Canada, or down east Maine, favorite DXpedition locations, the local city parks, the beaches, mountains, or even a mall parking lot can provide the perfect opportunity to get away from the electrical noise at your apartment, condominium, or neighborhood. At the bare minimum, all you need is a good portable receiver and the willingness to go exploring by foot or by car for a good location. I've found that campgrounds can be excellent for DXing. Here at Camden Hills State Park, the campsites are wooded and there's plenty of open space around the sites for antennas. I've pitched a tent and set up a folding card table and chair inside. Essentials for DXing: a good receiver, antenna, a tape recorder to catch all the action, documentation such as the NRC AM log and the World Radio TV handbook, a light source, a power source, headphones, and a logbook and writing utensils. Your power source will, of course, depend upon your receiver's requirements. If you're carrying a portable receiver, then it's a good idea to have a spare set of batteries. When I go de-expeditioning, I like to bring the best equipment, in this case, the Drake R8B receiver. The Drake requires a more beefy DC power source than a set of C or D cells. There are a couple of options: run off of your car battery or use a separate 12-volt battery. I use a die-hard Deep Cycle Marine Gel Cell. Deep Cycle means you can drain the battery without killing it. The Marine designation indicates that it'll provide cranking power in a salt air humid environment, and a gel cell doesn't pose the risk of burns from spilled battery acid. This will easily provide enough power for three nights of solid DXing. Another option, especially if you're carrying equipment into a remote site without vehicle access, is a wheelchair battery at about half the size and weight. If you run off the car battery, remember to run the engine every 3 hours or so. You don't want to risk being stranded. At least have jumper cables just in case. For serious DXing, you'll need a serious receiver. The Drake R8B receiver is kind of big to be packing. If you're on foot to a remote location, the Sony ICF 2010, Palstar R30, Low HF 225, and AOR AR7030 Plus are all good medium wave DX receivers, lightweight and compact. For antennas, the simplest would be to carry a few hundred foot rolls of lightweight wire, or you can go as elaborate as a car roof mounted phased loop and whip array, such as Mark Connolly does on his car expeditions. Most importantly, you're out there receiving spectacular signals that may not be heard at home. To learn more about de-expeditioning, the internet is a good place to start. Amateur radio operators are into de-expeditioning in a big way. Just do a Google search for de-expedition and check out all the action. More next time on the DX Digest. I'm Bruce Connolly, 73 and good DX.
If you'd like to contact one of our editors here at the DX Audio Service, it's very easy to do. Just send it to your editor at the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, 706 McKenzie Drive, Lima, Ohio, 45805. Or if you like to use email, you can contact, say, Mark Durenberger at mark@durenberger.com. That's spelled D-U-R-E-N-B-E-R-G-E-R.
National Radio Club.
Mark Durenberger here with another DX Audio Service Bandscan column. And while you're enjoying the National Radio Club convention in Lima, Ohio, we're in Minneapolis interviewing Gary Wilson, an engineer of note who serves on the Communications Council for PPAC, the Primary Entry Point Advisory Committee. We'll talk about PPAC, we'll talk about the difference between EBS and the new EAS. Gary, first,
PPAC?
PPAC is the Primary Entry Point Advisory Committee.
Okay.
And let's back up to Primary Entry Point. Everybody knows what EBS was, the annoying two tones. Well, the FCC went through, and now there's Part 11 for new emergency alerting. Most of the EBS things were weather-related. The new EAS still serves the same primary function, and that is to get the voice of the president out to the American public in times of emergency, gets them onto the radio so everybody can hear if the president has a vital message.
So the EAS, the only difference between the EAS and the old EBS is the way the alerting is done. The purpose is the same.
Purpose is the same.
So if the balloon goes up, you want to be able to get instant national communications and everybody can get the message at the same time.
Correct. The president can speak to the American public and say, you know, hey, everything's okay. The old EBS system was never tested, and it was often wondered, will this system ever work if it has to work? The new EAS is addressable. If you have a broadcast license, you are required by your terms of your license to carry the federal level stuff, which is called an EAN, Emergency Action Notification. So all stations theoretically have this equipment in place. It's fed down to 34 primary entry point stations. That's where PEP comes from.
And these are the bigger stations that serve wide areas?
Typically 50 kilowatt AMs. There's two FMs in the system. In the state of Hawaii, it goes to the state civil defense office, which then has an excellent way of getting it out to everybody in Hawaii. So mostly 50 kilowatters, all your big favorites. There are a few notable exceptions. One would expect WJR in Detroit would have been a PPAC station. It's not. In fact, there isn't one in Michigan. The way the considerations were is, was the station willing to cooperate with the program? If they were willing to cooperate, then we went further with the loan agreements, putting the equipment in place and whatnot.
So the government funded equipment to be located at each of the big radio stations.
Correct.
That participated.
A new generator, a large fuel tank, transfer switch for the generator, obviously. And
to keep the station self-sufficient in an emergency.
For up to 30 days.
Oh, really? So you could run, if let's say the power went off in, I was going to say Detroit, but that's a bad example.
Kansas City. The 810 facility.
The station there, WHB, would have the fuel to run by itself on a generator for 30 days.
Correct.
Right.
That's one of the requirements.
Okay.
And that gets into a lot of fuel, because when you're talking a 50 kilowatt station, how big of a generator do you need? How many gallons per hour? Da 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 da. And the generators were selected to not require a ton of maintenance to go 30 days.
And most of them start up. Listeners will remember our tour of WSM in Nashville when Watt Hairston started the generator for us on this very tape.
Fairly loud.
Yeah, so it has to start right away, obviously, because there may not be an engineer there to start it. It has
Correct.
To start automatically.
The stations all received a programming rack, has equipment in it, so you can talk live on the radio from the transmitter site or the... we're not supposed to call it a bomb shelter anymore. The emergency shelter is where the equipment's located. One of those was put in every one of the stations.
Through the PPAC program?
Which is administered by FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which is the same people that helped the FCC do the old EBS thing.
Okay, so now we have these key stations identified, and presumably they cover such large areas.
95% of the population of the United States.
Covered by these AM 50,000 watts.
Correct.
Okay, so now you've got the equipment in place and they're volunteering to work with you. Now, how do you connect them together to get the program to them?
Well,
the emergency information.
FEMA administers the program. I'm the communications chairman on the board of directors for PPAC, so it's kind of near and dear to my heart how we get the signal out there. We have two proprietary ways. Obviously, we don't want single thread anything because it can fail. So we have a dedicated land-based system to get the signal out, and it's proprietary and it's secure. That was one of the requirements of the system. You don't want to have some hacker, if you will, hacking into our system and being able to take over a radio station's programming, because this is automatic takeover of the programming. If these boxes are activated, you lose it.
So the box theoretically should only be able to be activated by the president or someone
Correct.
In his office. Okay.
I met a couple of the guys who carry the football, I think they call it, those military communications
guys.
Yeah. The bag. Yeah. Our program's in his bag. He can activate it.
And when he pushes a button or whatever he does, that should automatically switch all of the stations participating to this source, and everybody's getting the feed from wherever the president is.
Correct.
At the same time.
That's how it's supposed to work.
I like the way you said that's how it's supposed to work, because I want to get into some stories about whether it's rolled out the way it should have.
It has.
Okay. Well, go ahead. You were saying, so that's one way is the...
The land-based system is terrestrial. We've also got some radio links in.
So the radio link is in case the line...
The main line breaks down
or a fiber cut or something.
Right. Yeah. And the thing we're working... And the other thing is, even though we have 34 stations, everybody knows they're 50 kilowatters. If you can't hear your 870 in Chicago... You're still going to be able to hear 810 out of Kansas City if you're in the Chicago area at night. Mm-hmm. Daytime, it's iffy. There's not, obviously, one in every state. There's two in Ohio. There's the 1100 in Cleveland.
Yeah.
And then WLW, of course.
Are any participants less than 50,000 watt stations?
Several. KFYR in Bismarck. 550. Mm-hmm. 5 kilowatter, but look at the coverage they have. Mm-hmm. WSTA, St. Thomas, Virgin Islands, 1 kilowatt, 1 tower. WKAQ in San Juan, Puerto Rico is I'll call them a 10 kilowatter. They have a pair of 5 kilowatt transmitters combined to make 10, and they cover the Caribbean basin real good. You know, we don't care if the other Caribbean nations hear the president, but we want to be able to make sure we have some overlap.
Mm-hmm.
Almost everybody else except for the FMs are 50s.
Okay.
LA is a 5 kilowatter, but they have good coverage.
Who is that?
Richard Rudman Station.
Oh, KFWB.
Yeah, KFWB. Yeah.
Okay, very good. So how long has this system been tested and in operation?
The program was first thought about in the 90s, early 90s, 1990, 91. They had the first group of meetings, and they went through one iteration of how to get the signal to these 50 kilowatters. And AT&T came up with a very expensive system that was always connected and had a little heartbeat indicator on the front of the unit. And that didn't go to all 34 stations. That went to about 12 stations for tryout. And the thing didn't work. WHB 810 down in Kansas City had one of the first ones. It was a central located station. Everybody thought, oh, this will be a great test bed. Thing hardly ever worked. Couldn't get good phone lines or something out to the site. So then we went, okay, what can we do next? So we had a lot of talks with a lot of people in the industry. And now it's a volunteer group. So a lot of the engineers sat down and said, what can work better? And that's where the advisory committee part comes in. We advise FEMA on the best way to run this program.
So you don't have to enforce it. You just tell FEMA how to best do it.
And then since the primary entry point advisory committee is made up of a member, and it's usually the chief engineer of each of the 34 stations, then, of course, they go back and implement it.
Well, tell us some of the war stories about how this rolled out, and did you have any... Gary, folks, is smiling now.
Well, there was a station who will remain nameless who, as we all want to do, is make sure the system works and test it well. So the individual at the station had all of his equipment taken out of the loop. So there's no way this signal could go on the air. And he wanted an actual, send me a presidential message, like the president's going to go.
But not, he said, I've got it disconnected from my transmitter, so it can't go on the air.
So it can't go on the air, so please send me that. Well, FEMA's a government agency, and they have great programs and great training and great procedures.
I'm waiting for the but.
But... So the way the story goes is they were getting ready to test, so they go to the page on the computer screen where this individual station is and select, yes, go to this station, and then put a little checkbox next to the rest of them saying, don't send to this station. You know, yes and no. Well, that's one page. Unfortunately, there were two more pages after that station that somebody forgot to look at and check, no, don't send a signal to here. So when the signal went up to this one station, it also connected to all these other stations on
pages
line.
2 and 3.
On pages 2 and 3.
Oh, my.
And so the system does work. It's been tested. And this, of course, was a Friday afternoon.
So what happens if you're the chief engineer of WLS and you're down having a beer or something on Friday afternoon and your pager goes off and they say, someone just took over the radio station, we can't shut it off. What are you going to do?
Well, there's two things you can do. Since that happened,
So is that what happened?
Yes.
That was a loaded question. But my understanding is that the equipment at the transmitter is such that you have to go out to the transmitter and manually disconnect it in order to stop the
The
takeover.
That's now changed.
Yeah. And so that, and a lot of transmitters didn't have someone manning the transmitter sites.
And there was one facility where the engineer was more than 45 minutes away.
My word.
And they didn't get the...
So what kind of rock and roll did the president play to fill that dead air
when
they
apparently
had taken
we
over?
Had some dead air and a lot of testing. 1, 2, 3.
Oh,
can you
no.
guys hear me? And it, not only did it capture the big stations, of course, the system worked the way it's supposed to. The big stations then capture the little stations, and it has the trickle-down effect. So all of the state of Florida, apparently all of, most of Ohio, there are several stations in the United States that it captured them, and it went down the line. The system does work.
When was this? Do you remember?
It's right after we got the new systems in.
I'll bet our listeners remember. I'm sure a lot of them.
I'm sure, because it's been discussed a lot. You see a lot of it. So since then, we said, okay, that happens. How can we keep it from happening? We have now access to remote control. You have to hold a button down for 2 seconds. Are you really sure you want to dump this off? The emergency alert system, most of them are only allowed to be 2 minutes long. The presidential message is the only one that there's no time limit. So if it had been anything but this message, 2 minutes later, the boxes all would have dropped back into normal.
Oh, I see. The code that went out said this is a presidential message.
There is no time limit.
There is no time limit.
Otherwise, 2 minutes later, they all would have went click and dropped off.
I heard WLS was captured, and it took a while. I don't know how long, but they had to drive out to their transmitter site.
New Orleans.
WWL in New Orleans?
Yep.
What other big guys?
Cleveland.
Was there someone there? Same thing happened there? They had to...
He got out to it really quick and pressed the button. Boy, I want to say it was about 10 stations. I don't have all of them off the top of my head. That's something we try to forget. We learned from it, and now we're... You know, it's how your brain cancels the bad things out. That's what we do.
And that's like that.
The only real fault in the system. The system gets tested 2 or 3 times a week, and then we all get results. Yes, it works.
Do you know that it works, or do you get a printout on it?
You get a printout that says it works, because they actually send something to the station. The box picks it up, records it, and then plays it back down the line so the person, whatever FEMA headquarters is testing, can actually judge the quality of the circuits that we use.
Now, is there any kind of testing done over the air for this, or is the only testing the EAS test?
It's only EAS test. We do not do anything actually on the air.
So the only way listeners are going to know that PPAC is involved is if there's a real, or at least theoretically, if there's a real message.
Theoretically, yes.
Okay. You've been connected with a lot of big radio stations, and you have associations with a lot of the big stations through your chairmanship of this committee. I'd like to probe here for a couple of minutes about any stories you might be able to share with our listeners about some of the big stations and some of the things you either learned there or were, you know, turned on by. Or
KTWO.
1030 in Casper.
Yes, big station, nice people. At the beginning of the program, they wanted to harden all the sites, so they put...
Well, explain what you mean by hardening to our listeners.
So if it took a lightning hit or, say, for instance, an electromagnetic pulse, also known as a nuclear weapon, were to go off, the surge of voltage wouldn't kill everything. So surge suppressors were put in. The government hired a contractor to come out and do these.
On all the radio stations?
All 34 of them. Okay. Well, apparently KTWO's transmitter site burned out about an hour and a half, burned down to the ground about an hour and a half after the contractors left. They hadn't done work right. So, yeah, they got to buy a new site for there.
Oh, my
word. That was pretty cool. Houston went through several generators and found out that there's a difference between voltages in some parts of the country, and when you order the wrong generator and put it in, it becomes a motor instead of a generator. So we did a few of those. Most of the stations, you know, we've got full-time chief engineers. They're 50-kilowatt stations. They're up-to-date in that they'll put newer transmitters in, and they always keep the older ones around. And you can always hear when they're testing the older ones, because they sound a little differently.
A little muddier.
A little muddier, not as crisp, not as punchy, maybe.
Anything else that you can think of you'd like to add?
Primary entry point is a really good system. It's an all-volunteer system. It's funded by the government, but it's basically run by the people in it. So it's volunteer-ran. It's the most cost-effective emergency alerting program there's ever been. It's a great example of a public-private partnership.
And we hope we never have to use it.
I hope we never have to use it.
Great. Gary Wilson, thank you very much. I hope we can invite you back to talk to you about radio.
We'd love to do it, Mark.
Mark Dernberger in Minneapolis. We'll be back again next month with more on the DX Audio Service. Till then, good listening, DXers.
Many of you are probably wondering where we got the cool jingles and themes for the magazine. All the logos that you have heard and will hear over the years to come were created at TM Century in Dallas, Texas. Dave Grobner, CEO of TM Century, believes in what we do and kindly donated the jingles to the National Radio Club. For this, we could never express our most sincere and heartfelt thanks to Dave and the crew at TM. Now, while at TM, I recorded an interview with Dave that will be on our next After Dark magazine, which will, by the way, be renamed to All Radio, kind of appropriate for our club. I think that you'll find what Dave has to say to be an interesting look into the business of jingles and image themes. You know, making a jingle is not too easy. Believe me, I was in the business in the 1970s, and today's production climate is light years ahead of the old Ampex 440 8-track on 1-inch tape and singers huddled in a small room the size of your bedroom. The TM Century studio is large, and their recording room is stacked with some of the best recording equipment in the world. But just because you have good equipment doesn't mean that you can put together good jingles. The engineer and the singers work as a team to make sure that everything sounds right. Exactly right.
Hey everybody, y'all might recognize the guy on the left for sure, Matt. Wally from old TM.
Yep.
And that's Fred on the right, and this is Fred. These are for National Radio Club.
Well, welcome.
Okay, here's a pair right here.
Oh,
and Fred's gonna record us the whole time.
After all,
just FYI.
Okay.
Oh, let's give him some good stuff.
Then the singers try the logo, and the engineer sets the level on each microphone.
I got it. There.
So
it
let's give him a test blast. There's the one, two, three.
National Radio Club.
Now we're ready to rock and roll.
Sorry, I blinked my eyes and you all were halfway through it. I'm sorry.
You're Tom. So it's a 2-4 bar. So for now, club is off on 2. Now that might change at the back.
National Radio Club. National Radio Club.
Vocals are recorded and then later mixed to the cuts that you hear. A very scientific and exact process that produces a sound and image for the National Radio Club. And I should mention that WNRC will have new jingles at this year's convention, such as this Legal ID.
This is WNRC, Convention City, a National Radio Club radio station.
NRC Convention, WNRC, Convention City.
Again, thanks to Dave and all the folks at TM Century in Dallas. And to Wally Walrow, his wife Rosemary, and daughter Tammy for showing me around Dallas and some of the sights from the past, such as the old PAM Studios at 4141 Office Parkway, and doing some tower hunting as well. If you work for a radio or television station, please visit TM Century's website at www.tmcentury.com. That's TMCENTURY.com. Or for online ordering of jingles, stop by their Studio Dragonfly site at www.studiodragonfly.com. That's StudioDragonFly.com.
At this time, please turn over your tape to side 2.
National Radio Club!